Hey, everybody, it's Kathy Lee Gifford. I want you to join me on my latest episode, please, of Kathy Lee and Company. I have the extraordinary and never boring Mr. Glenn Beck with me this week. Glenn, what am I going to learn about you that I don't what do I not know about you that I'm going to learn?
No, but it's not going to be boring. No. It will not be boring.
Is that the worst thing you can be in anything?
It is.
Boring. Don't be boring.
It is.
So he won't be boring. So download me at podcastone.com or iTunes, Kathy Lee and Company.
Available now at podcastone.com.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
Ron Paul has spoken many times about the importance of Austrian economics. But what is it and why does it matter? I'm Charles Goyette. Ron Paul and Austrian economics next.
How would you like to do something that's good for you and good for America? Well, you can just by shopping like you normally do. You see, just about everybody uses Amazon these days because it's so easy. But from now on, when you're going to shop on Amazon, go to the PodcastOne.com Ron Paul page and click on the Amazon link there. When you do, a portion of whatever you buy gets kicked back to the Ron Paul show to help keep the podcast coming and keep us from having to run tons and tons of ads. So we can be selective and focus on getting you Ron's message. So do it. Go to PodcastOne.com. Click on the Ron Paul page and click on Amazon. The next time you're going to buy something, use that link. You'll be helping yourself because you're buying something you want, and helping America because you're helping keep Ron Paul's messages coming. And there's no extra costs involved. You pay the same price, it's the same Amazon. If you want to help out even more, tell your friends to do the same thing. Go to podcastone.com, click on Ron Paul, then click on the Amazon link. You'll be glad you did.
So how would you describe Austrian economics to those who aren't familiar with it?
Well, first off, it's called Austrian because the promoters of this school of thought on economics, many of them came from Austria and immigrated during World War II and came to the United States and other countries. But the way I would describe it is it is free markets. It's based on property rights. It's based on contracts. It's based on honest money. You can't defraud the people with fiat money and allow central banks to allow central banks to monetize debt. So this is different. A lot of people say, well, don't we have free markets and free enterprise? Isn't that what we have? No, we don't. And it always bothers me when they say that we're having problems today and look how it bails out the rich and hurts the poor. See, capitalism doesn't work. Well, I don't use the word capitalism very often because I don't like it. I like free markets, and nobody is privileged. In free markets, there is a king in the free market, and it's called the consumer. The consumer gets to decide which products that they will be produced and what the price will be. And this is very, very important. And Austrian economics teaches that you have to have a free market pricing structure. Mises, the great Austrian economist who escaped the Nazis because he was Jewish and came to this country at the beginning of World War II, he says that that socialism can't work because it doesn't have a pricing structure, and predicted it would fail, predicted that systems like Russian communism would totally fail, and he was absolutely right. But Austrian economics also teaches that you can't have price fixing in the monetary system either, like we do. And just about everybody accepts this. Nobody really challenges except that young generation that's coming through college right now, starting to. And that is you fix the price of money by fixing the interest rates. So if you fix prices too low, if interest rates are down at 1%, people might use it too often and do too much and have what we call malinvestment. So this to me is so key. It's just the principle, the explanation of the business cycle that the Austrian economists have provided for us. This explains so much. It explains price inflation, explains the business cycle, explains recessions and depressions and why people suffer. So for me, this offers a tremendous opportunity to make it so that the economy can be healthy rather than having economic planners. You have basically three choices. You have socialism type economics, and there's various forms of socialism. Then you have free markets that I'm talking about. Then you have interventionism, where you think you can have central economic planning through monetary manipulation and special privileges through regulations. That's what we have, but it's also what we see failing today, and also the reason that we have to be prepared to decide what are we going to have in place of this interventionism if it doesn't work. Are we going to drift over to more socialism and fascism and corporatism, Or are we going to say, you know, free markets work pretty well anytime they're tried, and certainly the best trial was in our early history. So, of course, I talk about Austrian economics because I think it's so humanitarian. If you care about your fellow man, you're going to care about an economic system that provides prosperity for the people. But in this, it also means that you have to have some rule of law. You have to have a government that's not allowed to do certain things, maybe provide for a sound economy and a sound currency. But also, it implies that you don't waste your resources by fighting endless wars. So for me, Austrian economics offers an awful lot to the solutions that we need to get out of this recession and prevent it from going into a depression.
Well, I suppose anybody looking for a vivid or dramatic example of your description of interest rates and central banking and the subsequent malinvestment need look no further than the example that we've suffered here in the United States of the real estate boom driven by Fed artificially lowering interest rates, driving a boom in the real estate market and a boom that consequently busted.
Yeah, and I think they were perfect examples. I date our real problems, once history studied, I think you're going to date the real downturn starting in the year 2000 with the bursting of the Nasdaq bubble. Austrian economists predicted there was a bubble there. Greenspan did and Bernanke did. The Keynesians never predict there's a bubble. They claim they don't even know when there is a bubble. Only Austrians seem to understand this. So the predictable came about and the Nasdaq burst. But to some of our amazement, once again, they went printing money like crazy. And Greenspan took interest rates down real low. And everybody said he kept them too low, too long, caused the next bubble, which was a housing bubble, which it was also accentuated by Community Reinvestment Act. That is telling bankers they had to make loans to risky individuals. And that bubble had to burst, and it did. But you say, well, they're printing even faster now. Where's the bubble? Prices aren't going up like the devil. They are going up. They just won't admit it. The prices are going up significantly, and most people who are living, especially on fixed income, realize it. But there is a bubble out there. People have excessive trust and confidence in our debt, and the world is buying it. Less so because our Fed has had to buy a lot of our own debt. So even that bubble is getting very, very shaky. It looks like that bubble will burst almost any time. But the world is in such a mess that when you see Cyprus, having a crisis, people and the European countries, they're no better off than we are. So when they get in trouble, they go to the next currency. So we benefit, especially because we have the reserve currency of the world. But that cannot last. If it could last, you and I would not have to worry about it because we could just print money and live off the rest of the world. So logic tells us it will end. And I think every single day we're getting closer and there are signs on the horizon that something dramatic will happen, that this economy will not maintain the status quo. It's not going to all of a sudden get back to 4 or 5 or 6% real growth rate. So the alternative is, what are we going to do? Are we going to just accept a further downturn in the economy, or are we going to finally wake up and say that we've had some good hint as to what to do, and it's found in freedom, it's found in property rights and contract rights, it's found in sound money, and the total rejection of Keynesian interventionist economics?
So how would you describe Keynesian economics? And am I right in saying that this is the theory that Republicans and Democrats alike seem to subscribe to?
Yes, they do. And it reminds me of a statement made that maybe was the peak. Maybe it will turn out to be the peak of Keynesian economics. And that occurred on August 15th, 1971, when Richard Nixon said, oh, no more gold standard, not even a pseudo international gold standard. Let's put on tariffs on imports. Let's put on wage and price controls. And then he goes on to say, we're all Keynesians now. In a way, he was speaking the truth. And governments reflect a philosophy of the people and the teachers. And it was the prevailing attitude was that you had to have government to take care of people. And therefore, we won't have, authoritarianism of the fascist communist style, but we'll have this gentle stuff called intervention. And we'll just redistribute wealth. We will manipulate the economy through central banking and do it this way. But the whole thing is from August 15th, 1971, it's actually been downhill. If you look at real wage incomes from 1971 up till now, real wages are lower. I mean, there's still on the surface a lot of prosperity around, and a lot can be salvaged if we do the right things. But in reality, real wages are down because the value of the money is down. The other thing Austrian economists teach is that Keynesians won't accept is that there is a rule that if you destroy and debase a currency, that is just by printing too much of the money, that you put the penalty more on one class versus the other. So the poor and the middle class suffer a lot more than the wealthy. And just think about the bailout. Who got the bailouts? Not only did they make money when the bubble was being burst and, you know, being built up, but they also got the bailouts too. And yet the middle class, you know, they had the higher prices. They still have to pay their taxes, and they lost their jobs and they lost their mortgages. So that is just true. And that is the reason why I really firmly believe that Keynesian economics is on its last legs. Now, those who believe in it, which are plenty of them, plenty in Washington, plenty in our universities, they will, you know, they will argue very strongly against it. Just ask Paul Krugman what he thinks about it, and you'll find out that he's not going to throw in the towel yet. I don't think Bernanke's going to throw in the towel that he and the Federal Reserve is the cause of all this trouble. But reality is reality. There's no reason why we can't get the people of this country to consider very seriously this beautiful option that we've had a taste of, and we have a better understanding. The Austrian economists have explained this so much better than we knew, you know, at the turn of the century, or even back when our Constitution was written. Adam Smith had a great grasp of economics, but he did not have the full understanding of Austrian economics. So there's every reason that philosophically and academically, we have progressed a long way in the understanding economics and monetary policy.
Thank you, Dr. Paul, for another great podcast. There's certainly no excuse if the American people haven't figured out in the recent downturn that the cronies got the bailouts and the people got the bill. Ron Paul, The Weekly Podcast. I'm Charles Goyette.
This concludes another PodcastOne.com program.